I attended a session once in the middle of downtown. I just by happenstance found out that a gentleman by the name of Peter Popoff was in town. This would be, I don't know, 15 years ago, and I don't know if anyone's familiar with Peter Popoff. Peter Popoff is a gentleman who got caught and charged with fraud, because what he was doing was inviting a whole whack of people into his congregation on his traveling evangelism ministry. And at the door, he was getting people to fill out a card. Name, address, phone number, just basic contact information. And then there was a spot on that card for, you can put what is ailing you. If you've got any sicknesses or disease or injuries or whatever it is, you can put that there. And then his wife, unbeknownst to thousands of people for quite a few years, was in a secret room taking those cards and then feeding that information into a very discreet in-ear piece in his ear. So when all of a sudden he was saying that the Spirit of God, he would point out and go, you, ma'am, red shirt, three rows from the back, the Lord is telling me you have an injury with your leg. He wants to heal you. What it really was is that he was getting information fed into his ear and he got caught. There's another gentleman who has this ministry that he likes to, he says that he has the ministry that God uses his breath. So he stands up at people and they're all in the Spirit and he breathes the Spirit of God on them and they're all magically healed. I am more prone to believe that he has too much garlic in his breath and he could actually just knock people out by his bad breath rather than the Spirit of God. There is an unfortunate trend, and Christianity is not exempt from it, that people will create an industry to prey on those who are weak and those who are needy. And so, as humans, we are prone to seek out that which we can receive healing or have our needs met, regardless of how ridiculous it sounds. There are scams for money that happen all the time simply because people are in financial need and somebody offers them a quick and easy escape and then people fall to it because we want that. And it saddens me and it hurts me. It actually angers me because when I was 10, I was diagnosed with celiac disease. And for those who do not know what that disease is, it's a genetic incurable disease of the small intestine that if you eat wheat, oat, rye, or barley, it paralyzes the small cilia hair that line the small intestine. It paralyzes them, makes them go flat. And those hairs are what absorb nutrients out of your food. So for the first 10 years of my life, I was malnutritioned. And then I started having complications and problems, went for tests and came through with a diagnosis. Changed my diet, my parents changed their food, they changed everything to accommodate me with this radical new diet. And I sprouted, I gained weight, I grew, and some of you are looking at me going, ah, that's funny, you grew. Yes, I was shorter and skinnier than I am now, if that is possible to believe. And then when I was 11, we were at a Sunday night church service, and at the end of the service, the senior pastor just made a general call out to the congregation, and it said, if anybody would like to come up for prayer, come on up. And my mom looked at me, and she said, Jordan, do you want to go up? Well, sure, why not? So we went up to the front, and the senior pastor, and he just took a little bit of oil and put it on my, and the minute his hand hit my head, I felt a burning fire go right through me from head to toe, instantly. And my mom looked at me, without me saying anything, I just stood there in that moment, and she looked at me and went, you're healed, aren't you? And I turned to her and went, yes. And since then, I have eaten at my leisure donuts, Long Johns, cupcakes. I am a lover of bread. There is a God of miracles, and it angers me to see these ministries popping up that take advantage of the needy and the hurting to fill their own pockets. We've been doing this series for the last month on experiencing the marvel of God, re-engaging with our eyes and our body and our spirit, the marvel of God. Leonard spoke on seeing the glory of God in creation. I don't know if anyone remembers that creepy big blue eye he put on the television screens that were staring at us for about 10 minutes. Robin spoke an excellent sermon on seeing and engaging in the glory of God and what He is doing in other people's lives. That it is not just about us, that we see what God is doing in others and we can rejoice in that and see and acknowledge the glory of God. Jordy last week spoke an excellent sermon with quite passion on experiencing God and seeing His glory in all seasons of life, in particular our darkest hours, opening our eyes to see. And so this morning, I want to speak on experiencing the glory of God through the miracle of life. Now, when I created this sermon series, I unbeknownst to me, I actually painted myself into a corner. Because, where do I go with this? I can talk about the general big picture, the marvel of life, and I can talk about creation and other people and do all that, but that's already been spoken about. So that leaves me then with, well, at least I thought was this, well, then I can talk about children. Which I could. My own testimony, my own son is a $15,000 miracle of life. He's a miracle. But then I read Psalms 19. And I'd like you guys to turn there. I'd like to read Psalms 19, verses 1 through 8. Experiencing the glory of God and the miracle of life. Jesus said, I have come that you might have life and that you might have it more abundantly. Psalm 19, verses 1 through 8. The heavens proclaim the glory of God. The skies display His craftsmanship. Day after day they continue to speak. Night after night they make Him known. They speak without a sound or word. Their voice is never heard. Yet their message has gone throughout the earth and their words to all the world. God has made a home in the heavens for the sun. It bursts forth like a radiant bridegroom after his wedding. It rejoices like a great athlete eager to run his race. The sun rises at one end of the heavens and follows its course to the other end. Nothing can hide from its heat. The instructions of the Lord are perfect, reviving the soul. The decrees of the Lord are trustworthy, making wise the simple. The commandments of the Lord are right, bringing joy to the heart. The commandments of the Lord are clear, giving insight for living. When I grew up, I was inundated with a series of teachers in school or these motivational speakers. And I would even dare say, even from the pulpit, you would get these messages of live life to its fullest. Or you would hear someone use an example of a man that died in regret and they would look at him and go, don't be like that man. He never truly lived. What a bunch of over-the-counter-top pop psychology phrases. Live life to its fullest. What does that mean? I Googled. List of 25 things that I must do to live life to its fullest. And sure enough, there are, you can find thousands. Everyone's created a list of 25 things you must do in this lifetime. You must do this. And if you do all 25 of these things, you have lived this life to its fullest. Oddly enough, nowhere on that list is having a family or being a good husband or a good wife and having a good marriage. No one's list includes that. Everyone's list is everything from the Roddy, you must join the Mile High Club, or you must travel to these countries and do this. You must see these waterfalls. You must do this, this, and this. And they've got these bucket lists. But they're not my bucket list, that's their bucket list. And then even then, it depends where you're from and who you are. If you were to go to Africa and say, what are the 25 things you must do to feel like you have led a fulfilled life? I guarantee you it'll be vastly different than the 25 things that you ask my father. What are the 25 things that you feel every person must do to live a fulfilled life? Who makes that list? So how do we have this, how do we come to this place of, I must do these things and all of a sudden my life will be fulfilled. I will be happy. I will be full of joy. I can die at peace and know that my life has meant something and I am full. What is it? Money? Travel? Experience? Secret waterfalls? And you ask Ashley. We went to Belize with her and we went and saw these extremely remote waterfalls. Nobody goes to them. We are one of only a handful of non-Belizeans that have ever seen these waterfalls with this gorgeous pool that you can dive into and the water's crashing over you and you can sit in the rock and the water from the waterfalls is over you. And it took a 2.5 hour tractor ride through orange groves in a trailer with no suspension. And we're going over these rocks and through rivers, and then we had to take another hour and a half hike through a jungle with three natives literally hacking jungle out on the pathway. And every time we get a little bit further, they would stop and go, oh yeah, just make sure you don't touch this. That's razor sharp grass. You touch that, you'll have to give you stitches. We go a little further and don't touch this tree. This tree is poisonous. Go a little further. Oh, look at that. That's a fresh track from a jaguar. Probably from last night. He's probably really close. If you were to ask Ashley, her perception on that particular day is not the same as mine. I thought that was a wicked adventure. Okay? I'm talking top 10 experiences in my life, hacking through jungle with random natives and jaguar tracks and razor sharp grass and poisonous plants and these remote waterfalls that is just unreal experience. And Ashley will tell you that it almost ruined her trip and she'll never travel with me again. And I would say that with more regard, except that I know she's already told as many people that will listen. Be careful when you travel with Jordan because of this. The miracle of life and experiencing God in this life is more than just having children or more than just this physical what we do. Christ came that we might have life and that we might have it more abundantly. And there is a miracle in this. And we've heard from other people this whole month on how we can do that through various other means and ways. I would like to look at how. How can we as Christians look at our life, look at our circumstances, look at where we are, and for us, me, here, now, who I am, all of my mistakes summed up, all of my experiences summed up, everything I've ever done, my family's input, friends, society, my education, all of this summed up, and we sit here now and go, how can I experience this miracle of life and live it to its fullest? I'd like to start with the first one, which is perception is everything. Perception is everything. And complacency. Complacency. Well, what does that lead to? Familiarity leads to complacency. Maybe I'll go with that. Perception is everything and familiarity leads to complacency. When I was dating Andrea, Andrea was in the Crow's Nest Pass and I was up here in Edmonton. And I decided to surprise her one Saturday. I left work early, jumped in my truck. I drove all the way down to the Crow's Nest Pass. I bought flowers for her. She was working at the art gallery. And I, not 5 minutes from the Crow's Nest Pass, it's a Saturday in the middle of summer. It's clear blue skies. It's 27 degrees out. It's the most gorgeous day ever in the Crow's Nest Pass. And I listened to the radio and the local radio station goes, you know what? On this beautiful summer day, If you're bored and you're sitting at home and you don't really know what to do with yourself, go to the art gallery. They've got this and this going, and I just about slammed on the brakes and screamed. How is it that me, the lover of outdoors, am stuck in Edmonton, when on a beautiful Saturday in the Crow's Nest Pass, there are people who are bored and need encouragement to go to an art gallery? In the mountains. You can't be serious. You could go kayaking, you could go rock climbing, you could take out a canoe. You could go do any gazillion things that are available to you in the mountains that I would chop off my leg for the chance. But there's people in the Crow's Nest Pass on gorgeous Saturdays doing nothing. Playing World of Warcraft on a gorgeous Saturday, and they're trying to get them out of their homes to an art gallery. I found that to be an injustice, but it struck to me perception and familiarity. Me living in Edmonton, I saw this opportunity of a gorgeous Saturday to do all the things that I've always wanted to do. But how many people live in the Crow's Nest Pass and the mountains are just the mountains. And so they lose sight of the opportunity that is available to them. They don't even have any interest. Why? Because it's always been there. It's just always been there. Therefore, I don't acknowledge its value anymore. I no longer see the value in doing these activities because it's just always been there. Whereas me, from an outsider, I'm sitting there looking, who can I strangle to take their place in life? As Christians, we're no different. Living out this life, we become comfortable with the everyday. We can become comfortable with church. We become comfortable with the ins and outs of our Christian life. I've even been guilty of becoming comfortable with my daily routine of devotions, where I can honestly say I do an hour's worth of devotions and I go leave and go, what did I just read and pray about? Because it's just so familiar to me. I've been in church for 36 years. This is second nature. And it is easy to do things, and in a place where we have done things for so long that it becomes so familiar that it loses its life. Our relationship with God can become stagnant simply because we've been doing this for so long that it's not there. And then you see this new Christian who becomes saved and experiences the glory of God for the first time, and they're on fire. Mike Love tells this story all the time. He says he got saved and he was on the side of the road and he was getting picked up and somebody goes, hey son, where are you going? Heaven! I'm going to heaven! So instantly consumed with this new experience that had consumed him. And I sat there and went, people going, where are you going? I don't know. Guess I'll just go home. But we're not the only ones who are prone to that. In 1 Kings chapter 17, there's a story of a guy named Elisha. And Elisha had a servant with him. And Elisha was being pursued by the kings of Israel's enemies because he kept thwarting their attempts to sabotage and invade Israel. God would speak to Elisha. Elijah would speak to Israel's king. Israel's king would go and stop the invasion from secretly. So finally, this king asked, where is this man Elisha? We will send all of our armies there. We will surround that city and we will kill this man because he's thwarting all of our plans. So sure enough, one day Elisha's servant wakes up and finds the entire army of the enemies of Israel surrounding the city. And he wakes up Elisha in a freak out zone. Just full of freak out. We are dead. We are dead. We are dead. Elisha, what are we going to do? The enemy is here. We are dead. And what was Elisha's response? 1 Kings 17:24, he says this. He prayed out to God and said, Lord, I pray that you would take the scales off of his eyes. And sure enough, the servant looked out after Elijah prayed and he saw the hosts of the entire armies of God surrounding the hills. And Elisha spoke to him and said, greater is he that is with us. There is more with us than there is more against us. That servant, I am guilty of being like that servant, of coming to circumstances in life and becoming so narrow focused that I fail to see all that God is doing around me. And all that God is. So familiar have I that I spend entire weeks in God's presence in church. I worship, my hands are raised, I do the whole thing. But when the circumstances of life hit me, I get narrow focused on my issues and my problems, and I become blinded to all that God does and all that He is doing. In 1 Kings chapter 15 is the story of a guy named Naaman, who is an Assyrian general who comes down with leprosy. And he tries everything that can be tried to be healed. And finally he listens to his little Israelite servant girl who says, you know what, I have heard there is a man in Israel with the power to heal. And so this Naaman, he goes and finds Elisha and he talks to him. Elisha says, go and dip yourself in the Jordan River 7 times. And anybody who has ever looked at the Jordan River, it's not actually too far off from our North Saskatchewan. A little smaller, a little shallower, and a whole lot muddier. It's not a nice, pristine, cool, clear river where everyone gets their water from. It was the cesspool river of Israel. And so this general became offended and turned around and he was going to leave. And it was the servant girl that finally spoke to him again and said, you know what? If this man had asked you to do some great thing, and I can only imagine what that great thing was. Maybe he had to travel to some remote place and get some wildflower to come back and participate in this crazy ceremony. Or maybe he had to drain his blood and cut off his arm and thereby the Lord would be happy with his sacrifice. He said, had this man asked you to do something difficult, you would have done it. Then why are you so offended if God asked you to do something simple? Familiarity breeds complacency and contempt. That when all of a sudden the world turns on us and our circumstances become hard, that we look to God to do something out of this world. God, come down in your power and change my world. Completely by miracle, just take the magical wand and go boop. We want the bippity boppity boop. The fairy godmother to come down with her magical wand and just bippity boppity boop. Oh look, all your circumstances are gone. Good for you. Be happy and blessed, my child. Elijah in 1 Kings chapter 19 stood before God and the entire nation of Israel on a mountain. He defied the prophets of Baal, called down fire from heaven upon an altar, which consumed all the water and all the meat and the entire thing, then looked and commanded the rain to come again and waited, and then the rains came. God supernaturally gives him speed that he outruns the pace of a chariot in the mud. And then what does he do? After experiencing one of the greatest examples of God's power and His miracles and God's empowerment of a man to show His authority on the earth, He overcame kings and queens and prophets and called down fire from heaven. And then what did Elijah do? His perception changed. He became afraid and ran away. He went back to Mount Sinai and he stood before God. And when God came and said, Elijah, why are you here? He went before God and said, woe is me. I am a dead man. They're trying to kill me. I am the only one left. Everyone else is serving Baal. God, just kill me now because there's nothing left. How quickly did Elijah, after standing on a mountain and calling down the fire of God, his perception immediately changed and went before God with nothing less than a pity party. And God looked at him and said, "You are not the only one. There are 3,000 more that have not bent the knee. You are not the only one." Living this life, and then to have this extra burden that we put on ourselves, that God has come that we might live this life and that we might live it abundantly. But then circumstances hit and life hits. And I was reading it was actually Jordy. I believe you quoted a gentleman that was in a Nazi concentration camp. And he stated these words. He said, "Somebody, humanity, anyone can take just about everything from you, but what they cannot take from you is your choice on your attitude. Your attitude is your own. You always have that freedom to choose your attitude." Maybe that's another way to say our perception. Because we can perceive that we have been abandoned by God. We can perceive that the world has turned on us. We can perceive that we are alone in the world and we are nothing but failures. But then I ask you, is that the perception that God would want you to have of yourself? Is that what God sees of your life? Is that what God sees of you as a person? Is that how God sees the circumstances you are in? To live this life, and to live it abundantly, we must change our perception. To see us as God sees us. To see our circumstances as God sees our circumstances. To proclaim, as that song we sang this morning says, "I am who you say I am. I am chosen. I am forgiven. I am beloved. I am loved. I am beautiful. I am wanted." But our perception can kill our ability to live this life abundantly. We kill it. And we can kill it through our perception. We can kill it through becoming too familiar and losing the life. Because we just get too caught up in the perception. "Oh, I gotta go here and work this. I got work problems. I worked 10.5 hours yesterday and had dealt with nothing but problems. All day. And I can stand here this morning and honestly say that if I wanted to, I could easily go down the road of going and not choose to relax or not choose to stand up here and put in time to create this sermon, or choose not to give my wife a break and say, "No, I got work problems. No, I got to go do this. I got to do that." And just, I can choose to change my attitude and go down that road and put the blinders on instead of stopping and going, "God, what are you doing here? What are you doing in this moment, in this circumstance of my life, in this situation, here, now, today, this morning? God, what are you doing in my life? And how can I see through your eyes? How can I be the hands and the feet of Jesus this morning? Who is there at work, God, that I should be speaking to? God, who are you bringing across my path that I might be there for them?" Familiarity, perception. My father would tell you that when I went on a missions trip to Africa, I was one person. When I came back, I was a very different person. I changed on that trip. I changed because my perception changed. Yes, God touched me. It was a very powerful trip, but my perception of life changed. Changed. And it altered my life. The second one is, having God as the foundation of our life. I'll even go as further to say that our identity needs to be in Christ and Christ alone. Psalm 19, verse 7. It says, the instructions of the Lord are perfect, reviving the soul. The decrees of the Lord are trustworthy, making wise the simple. The instructions and the decrees of the Lord, they revive the soul and they make wise the simple. Jesus gave a teaching in Luke chapter 7 on two builders. One builder dug and built his house on bedrock. And another built his house on the alluvial sands of Israel. Israel has an alluvial sand. And what this alluvial sand does is that when it is nice, when the weather is warm and it is dry, the sand actually fits together in grooves, very similar to what a hard gravel would do. And it interlocks in itself. So the perception is, in the good weather and when it's dry, that the sand, when you walk on it, is just about as hard as concrete. You could take a sledgehammer to it, and it will not break. It will not move. That sand is hard. But it is treacherous, because when the rains come, when the monsoons come, and it becomes saturated, then it actually shifts in a very similar pattern to what an earthquake would be like. The sand will actually move in altering movements of itself, thereby shaking. And Jesus says this, a man who listens to my instructions is like a man who digs down to bedrock and builds his house on the bedrock. But another man who does not listen to my instructions is like a man who builds his house upon that sand. Who thinks that in the good times, when life is good, when life is going really well, that his house is built on something solid. But when the storms of life hit, and that ground becomes saturated, it shifts and moves. And the Bible says his house crumbles into a heap of ruin. The instructions of the Lord, I'll read it again out of Psalm 19. The instructions of the Lord are perfect, reviving the soul. The decrees of the Lord are trustworthy, making wise the simple. I have been talking with a few people outside of this church that keep talking to me about, they've been dealing with this issue in their life, and they overcame it. But it seems like they overcame something and then something else hit. And then something else hit. And then something else hits. And then they become tired. And then they give up. And then they become desperate. And fearful. We as humans may have the strength to survive a storm. We might build our life on that sand, which might be your ability to work hard and make money. It might be on your ability to be charismatic and make friends. It may be on your ability to be a completely relational, you're just awesome at relationships. You're great at business. You're a great father and a family man. You can build your life on your own power and your own talents and your own abilities, and you may be able to survive a storm or two. But there will come a day when the storms just keep coming, and they keep coming, and they keep coming, and it just seems like you're getting hit after one, after the other, and then your power fails, and your talent fails, and then something drastic happens. You lose your job. Your child dies. You can't have children. Your dreams fail and crumble and fall. Your health goes to nuts, and all of a sudden you're no longer healthy. And all of a sudden that entire foundation that you built is crumbling upon you because you no longer have the power from within to do it. And the whole point of that is that Christ is saying, if you build your life on my instructions, on who I am, your life will be secure. You will stand. You will endure. Why? Because our happiness, our joy, our identity, our peace, our life does not come from our ability to live this life, but comes from Christ. So that no matter what happens, no matter if your health is taken from you, if you are not able to have a family, if you are not able to get married and have a spouse and you live this life single, it does not matter if you lose your job and you cannot and you have to sell your home and your cars and you have to live your life down into this meager state, your joy and your happiness should not be based and built on your ability to live this life by your own power and your own strength, because if you do, you will fail. Eventually, at some point, the instructions of the Lord are perfect, reviving the soul. The decrees of the Lord are trustworthy, making wise the simple. If your hope, your joy, your peace, your ability to live this life is based on the source that is Christ, He will be, as Paul said in Philippians 4:19, he said, "But my God shall supply all that you need according to His glorious riches, which is in Christ Jesus." It is also in that same context that Paul said six verses earlier in Philippians 4:13, he says this very, very famous verse. He says, "But I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me." He's not talking about our ability to go do anything we want. He's talking about that when the waves of life are crashing upon you, when you feel you are in your darkest hour, when you are in the moment when you have no strength and no life, and God comes to you and says, "I am still calling you to be a husband. I am still calling you to be a father. I am still calling you to be whatever it is that God has called you to be. I can do this through Christ who gives me strength to live this life and to live it abundantly." Christ said, "I have come to give you life, that you might live it more abundantly." He said in John 15:5, he said it this way, "I am the vine, you are the branches. You abide in me and I in you." And then he says this one that really just sticks it, "For without me, you are nothing." That hurts. "I am the vine, you are the branches. You abide in me and I in you. And you will bear much fruit, for without me you are nothing." John 15:5. Yes, we can do this life by our own strength and our own talents. Everyone here has great gifting that God has given them. And we can use that gifting and we can accomplish great and many things. But the whole point of Acts chapter 1 and Acts chapter 2, Acts 1:8, God came and said, Jesus said, "But you shall receive power when the Holy Spirit has come upon you, that you might be my witnesses, Judea, Samaria, and to the ends of the earth." The whole point of Christ sending His Spirit and His Spirit living within us is that we would receive supernatural power to live this life, to do that which God has called you to do. Christ said it another way. He said, or no, it was Paul that said, the same Spirit, the same power that raised Christ from the dead now lives in you. And it is from that same reference that Christ was saying, "I have come that you might have life and that you might have it more abundantly." Our perception, but also our foundation of our life. Where have you built your life upon? On your own talents, on your own abilities and your own skills, or upon the foundation that is Christ and His teachings, which never waver and never fail? And the third one is this. And I'll read verse 8. The commandments of the Lord are right, bringing joy to the heart. The commandments of the Lord are clear, giving insight for living. The commandments, not the my desires, not the my suggestions, not the my hope is that you would do this. There is a tone in the language that makes the assumption that the Lord is our Lord, and that He has the right to issue or decree a command, and that we are compelled, we are behooved to follow that commandment, to follow those commands, which leads me to a very simple point that it's the oxymoron of the Christian faith. The oxymoron of the Christian faith is this, that by surrendering our life, we find it. And that by giving up our autonomy, we find freedom. By surrendering our life, we find it. And by giving up our autonomy, we find freedom. Christ came that He might set us free. The Israelites used to do a bunch of ceremonies when they would come to the temple. Leviticus chapter 7 talks about two particular sacrifices. One is called the wave breast offering, and the other one is the heave shoulder. And what they would do is they would carve the breast off of the animal, and then it says they would pick it up with both hands, and they would wave it before the Lord. And then it says they would take the shoulder and the arm and they would heave it like this. Without getting into too much symbolism, there is enough there to say the breast, the heart, the love, they would take that breast and they would wave it before the Lord as a symbol of their love. Lord, we love you. But they would take the shoulder. And what is the shoulder? There's a common saying that it says, upon my shoulders, or my shoulders are big enough to carry your burden. By taking the shoulder of their sacrifice and giving it to the Lord, it was one way of saying, Lord, to you I grant lordship over my life. That the burden of my life is now yours to carry. Lord, you now have control and dominion of my heart, my life, my marriage, my home, my destiny, my dreams, my desires, my hopes. All this now, the burden is upon you. It is upon the Lord. It is a chosen surrender that the Lord God is Lord. And we choose to acknowledge Him as such. We come and we say, Lord, I surrender to you. Use me as you will. Lead me where you'd want me to go. This ties right back into my previous thought on perception. And also my previous one on where your hope in your life is built. Because what happens if you've built this big, glorious life and you have everything you want and God comes and says, now, take your family and go to Africa. Will you lose your joy? Will you lose your peace? Or as a saying we had in Bible college, we always joked about it, will you lose the victory? Are you unable to stand up in church and worship God when God comes and says, now do this, go here? Or are you able to stand as Paul said and said, I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength? The Lord is the God of our lives. And when we get to a point where we have maintained or retained a certain amount of autonomy to ourselves, we will find ourselves in conflict with the Lord. And we will find our lives in conflict where God is closing doors and closing doors and closing doors. Because as I did when I was 25, trying to plan out my life as I saw fit, and God kept slamming those doors shut. And then I got frustrated, I got disillusioned, I got crabby and angry and all mopey and sad. Woe is me. And I really was looking at all my friends who were in full-time ministry going, God, why them and not me? And this isn't working. And I had this big weeping moment and pity party. Woe is Jordan, the guy who has done more hours than all of them. Why am I not rewarded? Why am I not blessed? Why is this person who doesn't deserve it getting this youth group full-time ministry without having to do anything? That's not fair. Where's the justice in that, God? And then, oh, God spoke to me ever so clearly. It's one of those moments where it's called the God slap moments. Three times in my life where I felt God has grabbed me by the scruff of the neck and just give me a real good slap across the face with a wake up. What do you think you're doing there, son? When I realized ever so strongly I was trying to retain the autonomy of my own life, when I had told God over, no, God, use me as you will. You've called me. God, I love you. You've saved me. I am yours. But then, no, God, I'm going to plan out this. And so while you're trying to get me to go here, I am putting all my effort still towards my own plans and my own ambitions, and they were falling out beneath me, and it was just ugly, and it was gross, and I became a 25-year-old disaster. And then I stood in front of my boss one day while that was all going nuts, and he sat me in his office and said, Jordan, you know what? We love your work. Because I was working full-time as a construction guy because, you know, that ministry wasn't working out. And he sat me down and said, Jordan, we really love your work. We love you as a person. We love what you do. How about we put you into Nate? We'll pay for all of your education expenses. Come back and we'll promote you into management. And when God calls you to ministry, just give us notice and be blessed and be on your way. And I sat there with my jaw dropped and going, okay, I guess that's the door. That one was pretty plainly obvious. I saw it. I was resisting the current for a long time, and then, poof, oh, look at that. That one's obvious. But there was a period there where I was miserable and ineffectual and immature. And it was squarely because I did not give God full command of my life. I did not truly surrender. I retained a portion for my own command. And I was not living an abundant life. I was living life. I was not living life abundantly. I was not in that place of living. I just wasn't. So I'll conclude with this. We really have three options. You can take a nihilist approach to life and you can go and experience everything that this world has to offer with the end game and the mindset that as long as I experience all the things I want to experience, then my life will be fulfilled because I will just end and I will die and that will be the end. Go fill your bucket list. Two, you can take the direction of I want to create a legacy so that the annals of time will remember Jordan Motz. Forever will I be etched in the minds of history for the great deeds that I will do, great as in great in the eyes of men, so that I will be talked about and written about. I will be remembered. Or you can take the position that God has called you to do what He has called you to do. He will provide you with life and peace and joy and fulfillment and grace, because this life is not the end. Philippians chapter 4 says we are the citizens of heaven. 1 Peter chapter 2 verse 1 says as travelers in this life, as temporary travelers, we are here only for a period of time to know that we will spend eternity in the presence of the God who is the source of miracles. And in His presence, we will spend all of life. And so I present you with those three choices. Where will you choose to live your life? Where will you choose to make your perception? Will you surrender your life to God? Or will you retain part of your own life? Will you fulfill all of your wants and desires in this life thinking that it will provide you with all that you think it will give you? Will you be happy and satisfied? It's funny how right now there's a whole movement of former feminists that refused to get married and didn't want kids because they were the strongest feminists in the world. And now we've got this entire group of feminist women between the ages of 40 and 55 who are lamenting the fact that they never became mothers and wives because they thought that they could, this ideology would fulfill them and provide all of their needs. And now their life has changed and they look back with regret. May I make the position, and it is only the opinion of me standing here saying, you can pursue everything that you want to pursue, and it will give you joy for a time. It'll give you joy for a season. But it will never satisfy you completely. We will always look to the next thing. Always we're moving on. How many stories of millionaires and billionaires do we hear where it's just not enough money. I must take over one more company. I must beat this person. I must reach the 50th wealthiest person in the world. I have talked to people who've spent their life and their entire savings traveling and it's not enough. It's not enough. I have talked to couples who their marriage is crumbling and they think if only I have children, then all of our needs will be met and we will become happy again. I have talked to countless men who stood and told me if only I get this promotion, if only I can get this job, then I will be satisfied and I'll provide my family and everything will be well and whole. And then they get the promotion and they realize that they haven't spent time with their family and their kids and there's mess at home and they're not happy. And then it never stops. Christ said, if you listen to my teachings and build your life upon me, which is the foundation, the bedrock, I'd like to close with those last 8 verses again. The skies proclaim the glory of God. The skies display His craftsmanship. Day after day they continue to speak. Night after night they make Him known. They speak without a sound or word. Their voice is never heard. Yet their message is gone throughout the earth and their words to all the world. God has made a home in the heavens for the sun. It bursts forth like a radiant bridegroom after his wedding. It rejoices like a great athlete eager to run the race. The sun rises at one end of the heavens and follows its course to the other end. Nothing can hide from its heat. The instructions of the Lord are perfect. They revive the soul. The decrees of the Lord are trustworthy, making wise the simple. The commandments of the Lord are right, bringing joy to the heart. The commandments of the Lord are clear. They give insight for living. How can we live this miracle of life that Christ said, come, I have come that you might have life and that you might live it more abundantly? Is it by your own power? By your own strength? I would argue that many times over we need to constantly change our perception to see our lives as God sees it. To go before God and say, God, as Jordy said, open my eyes to see all the glory that is going around me. To see God's beauty and His glory in creation, in nature, in the works and the lives of others. In your darkest hours, in your darkest moments, to still see the glory and the beauty and the marvel of God. But then also to build our life upon the foundation and the rock that will not fail you. So that when the storms of life hit, your joy doesn't falter and fail. Your peace doesn't disappear. Your hope does not diminish. Because your life is built on Christ and on His teachings. And surrender your life to the Lord. Let Him have control and dominion over your life. Because when we try to do things ourselves, is there a person here who would not stand up and say that I have failed? That you have failed? That I tried to do this by my own strength and it failed? I tried to do this and it didn't work. I didn't try to do this and it didn't work. And finally at rock bottom, I turned to the Lord and then things worked. Right, all of us right now have the time and the moment and the opportunity to look at our own life and say, have I surrendered my life to the Lord? Am I building my life and my joy upon the principles and the teachings of Christ, or am I building it upon my own talent and my own strength and my own ambition? And have you put the blinders on that you no longer see that what God is doing all around you? Are you so concerned with your own circumstances that you can no longer celebrate with your brother and sister? Are you so overwhelmed with life that you can no longer, as Jordy said, appreciate the blossom on a cherry tree? To see the beauty of God, as David said in the psalm, the beauty in the heavens. Albert Einstein said this. He said, I have gazed and studied the heavens, and in my opinion, I have seen more glory in my studies than the religious preachers have ever known. May that never be. May that never be in my life. That Albert Einstein would be right in saying that by his studies of the stars, he has seen more glory because I was too busy to stop and see the glory of God around me. For David said, the heavens proclaim the glory of God. It is all around us. It is in your life. It is in your friend's life, in your family's life, in your kid's life. It is in my life. It is there. I pray that you would live this life and live it more abundantly. And that it would be by the power and by the Spirit of God. For that is what He came for. I'd like to pray and close this service.